It is the Mighty 690 KGGF here on this Wednesday morning, Wildcat Wednesday, as we're joined here from Wildcat Extension Districts, Keith Martin and Jacob Weber. Good morning to the two of you.
Good morning.
Good to have both of you back, as we've been experiencing a lot of rainfall these last couple of, weekend, I should say, and kind of wanted to hit on that here to start, because obviously that comes with a lot of changes, whether they be negative, whether they be positive. I just know that there's certainly an outcome in your guys' profession when there is significant amounts of rainfall. So
lots of smiles.
Yes,
lots of smiles.
So what are some things happening because of that rainfall?
Well, rainfall has been great for people who are worried about prussic acid and nitrates. Those both occur in terms of a nitrate when we have poor growing conditions. So now that we have better growing conditions, the nitrate problems are pretty much over. In terms of prussic acid, the time is rapid regrowth after stress. So really we need to wait about 10 days before we can pretty much be over 7 to 10 days before we can be any worries about prussic acid in things such as sedan grass, Johnson grass, those sorts of things. In general, the larger and more mature the forage, the lower the risk. There's no such thing probably as no risk, but the larger the forage, the better. Also, the rainfall has maybe mitigated a little bit of concerns about some forage shortages, but we're still in a situation where we're short of hay. So I've got a lot more people looking for hay this year than not, so that leads to lots of questions about corn stalks, baling corn stalks, things of that nature. Even have got some questions about ammoniating forages. Ammoniation of forages is something you can do to low quality forages, which help increase the digestibility in the crude protein. And basically what you're doing is you're stacking the hay bales in a 2 to 3 high, and then you're actually putting in, covering the stack with plastic, sealing the stack, and then putting anhydrous ammonia in the stack. And what the anhydrous ammonia does is it breaks down the cellulose, or helps partially break down the cellulose and hemicellulose, which makes it more digestible. It also adds some nitrogen, which improves the protein it also improves the amount of protein that goes to the rumen, which helps the rumen microbe. So all sorts of issues with the dry weather.
Yeah, and is that it? Was the dry spell kind of the reason why hay is a little bit behind the show?
Yeah, the dry spell was part of it, and then on the fescue, as Jacob and I mentioned before, we didn't really have a spring. Fescue does well at 70 degrees, 70 to 80. Well, we were cooler than that, or hotter than that. So the fact that we didn't have the combination of the temperatures that weren't conducive to fescue growth and the spring, or in the dry weather, led to a reduction of the cool season grasses like the fescue, and then just the fact that it's been dry. We hardly had any rain at all in June in some instances, and May and June rainfall are very important to our summer forages like our Bermuda grass and native. So that's the reason we're short. So yeah, it was a combination of both the temperature and the dry weather on the fescue, and primarily just the dry weather on the warm season haze.
Yeah, it was like a 7-day period where it went from overnight freezes then to 90-degree weather during the
right
day all of a sudden. So
it was either too cold or too hot, basically.
Certainly.
Typical Kansas weather.
Yeah, no, I'm only lived out here for about a year now, and I'm just slowly but surely getting used to it. It's very interesting when it comes to it. It's very random, certainly. Mm.
Yeah. I call it aggravating at times.
Right. Sure, for someone that relies on a lot of kind of a regular basis type of seasonal weather that you're used to, and then you're not getting it at certain points like this year. We didn't necessarily get a spring season. I'm sure it's frustrating. So
yeah, but that means that when we have those nice days, we really enjoy them.
Right. Like this morning is tremendous.
So Deb can get out and run.
Right.
Get out and run a little bit. Yeah, no, I've liked the cool off these past recent days, and a little bit, you know, it feels nice in the mornings as well. So
yeah.
It's turning me more into a morning person, right. Believe it or not. So, well, Jacob, anything that you wanted to hit on here? I know you've been getting some calls.
I've been getting a lot of calls, and they're all over the board as what our concerns. But one of them that kind of was interesting, I'd like to talk about, is walnut caterpillar. Now, we've had fall webworm. Some folks call them bagworms. And a few years ago, they were quite numerous. We can see the web nest in the trees. And there's hardly any this year, which is nice. They go through cycles, and it's more relative to the parasites that kill the eggs or work on the eggs of the fall webworm. But now we're starting to see a little bit movement in the other direction where they're starting to increase in numbers. And walnut caterpillar does not make a web nest, but what's peculiar about this particular insect is well, a little explanation about caterpillars, and they come from eggs. Eggs are laid in the tree by a moth, the adult phase of the walnut caterpillar. Eggs hatch, the caterpillars migrate out and feed in a group. I guess you can call them a social insect. They stay together as a family. And as the caterpillar consumes food, it will start to get larger in size. The problem with the caterpillar is that its skeleton or is on the outside, exoskeleton, and it's really soft-bodied, so that that skeleton doesn't get much larger. So it has to stop feeding for a bit, goes through a molt where it sheds that outer skin with a new skin underneath so it can get larger. That new skin allows that caterpillar to get large very rapidly, and then it consumes food until it can't get any bigger, and then it has to go through this same process of shedding its skin, getting larger. And this happens about four or five times, depending on the species. And for walnut caterpillar, since they are group feeders, they all shed their skin at the same time, too, when they're ready. They migrate down out of the tree where they've been feeding on the foliage, and usually onto a large patch of bark, generally on either a large limb or on the trunk. And all congregate together, and a big mass of web and skins are shed, and then they march back up into the tree, usually following a trail of silken thread, and feed some more. And so you'll see these large patches as the caterpillars get larger. There'll be larger patches of the webs and skins on the side of the tree.
So what a life cycle. Eat, sleep. And yeah. I'm sure it's, in potentially, like you said, in groups and in families, it could potentially do some serious damage to trees.
I've never observed the caterpillars doing anything other than eating and shedding skin, but it might be interesting to see if they get together as a group and play cards or something like that.
If they have any other social life.
Yeah,
besides
if they have
just
a social
that,
life.
Something
they,
like that.
Well, it's probably a lot of gossiping because they hang around each other a lot. So, but they do consume foliage, and if there are enough nests of caterpillars on the tree laid, then there's going to be quite a few caterpillars, and they're going to be consuming a lot of foliage, and eventually they can be as numerous enough they'll defoliate the tree. Same thing is true with fall webworm. They'll cover the tree with web nests, and they're really... for the person who doesn't know too much about them, they get very concerned about the tree, about the tree's health. But in reality, these are just strictly foliage feeders. They don't do any other damage to the tree other than remove the foliage. And a tree, a good healthy tree, tolerates this quite well. And when they're done feeding, they leave, tree leaves out, goes back to in production, photosynthesis, tree recovers most of its energy. It's lost a little bit of energy is lost, and so if it comes down to push and shove, and you got want to get rid of the caterpillars, of course you can have the tree sprayed. It's going to cost a little bit of money, but if you realize that it's not going to cost or hurt the tree too much, you just save your money, let the caterpillars make the tree look ugly for a bit, and then they'll go away. Well, while a caterpillar, it kind of doesn't go away. When they mature, what they do is they no longer stay together as a group. They leave the tree, and they're going to look for places to kind of rest. It goes through a phase called pupation. It's the intermediate phase between a caterpillar and an adult moth. And so they're looking for a sheltered area. And if the tree is close to a house or a building, those caterpillars are going to be heading towards that building, looking for a place to rest. And they can get indoors. They can climb the sides of buildings and make a real nuisance of themselves.
Yeah, but at least it's good to hear that even with the nestling and, they put that web over themselves, it doesn't actually destroy the tree. It just, kind of, like you said, makes it look ugly for a little while.
Yeah.
And what is, the average course here real quick? Just, is it like a year or is it 2 years that the caterpillars kind of come and go?
There's oftentimes two generations per year.
Two generations.
And the first generation usually appears here in June, July. I think this is probably the first generation, so we're probably looking at another one later on in the year.
Another one this year. All right, Keith Martin, Jacob Weber, we will check in with you guys here in just a moment. Quick set of commercials on its way. This is the Mighty 690 KGGF.